always, stay in your homes. Stay in your homes.
Live from the Forbidden Book Group studio in Doppeltown, USA, it's Necronomapod with your hosts, Mike Stoffel and Mike Moncada. Episode 11, Joseph Delaney's The Last Apprentice series, The Curse of the Bane and the Revenge of the Witch. The story of a spooky man, his boy, and a village girl with very pointy shoes. And now, Necronomapod.
Those found without specific military orders are subject to summary execution. Stay in your homes. Repeat, Comrade Channel. This is a Class 1 emergency. All civilian traffic is barred from streets and highways.
Well, there it is.
Is this thing on?
It's on.
It's on.
Hey, we're back.
Hopefully we're on today. As opposed to last time when we weren't as on as we could have been.
It was the most maudlin, melancholy.
I know. The apathy was just boring.
It just goes to show that what a bad book can do to you.
Yeah.
And what a good book can do to you.
It's true.
So we are in episode 11.
11. Here we are. And we're doing two books this week.
I wanted to do two because they're short. Yeah. Well, they're not really short, but...
You bought them. I listened to them like I do with every book that I can.
300, 400 pages.
And I was really surprised at how, when you bought in actual hard copies of these books, how big they are.
But the print's big.
Really,
for
those
of us who need reading glasses, this is the perfect size.
Yeah, so I think I'm actually going to read the next one because I can read it without my reading glasses.
Exactly.
We are so decrepit here, the two mics. We're entering our dotage. Actually, we have some time ago. But which books are these that we're reading this week?
Well, Mike, I'm glad you asked. The first book is called The Last Apprentice, The Revenge of the Witch by Joseph Delaney. And the second book in the series is The Last Apprentice, The Curse of the Bane.
Curse of the Bane.
By Joseph Delaney.
And we have...
And originally in the English version, the English-British version,
yeah,
it was called The Spook's Apprentice.
Oh, yes, The Spook's Apprentice.
And The Spook's Secret.
Yes. We were actually, before we started recording here this evening, speculating as to why they changed the name. Now, publishers will do that between British and English versions of things. For instance, I guess the most famous is the Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone versus Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. In America.
Why'd they do that?
Well, I don't know, actually. The Philosopher's Stone is, you know, this famous legend about this stone that you can use to turn elements into gold.
Well, it's an alchemical.
Yeah, it's an alchemical thing. And I don't know why they thought that British folks would know that better than American folks, although, you know, they actually probably do.
They probably do.
But they changed the Spook's Apprentice and the Spook's Curse...
The Spook's Curse and The Spook's Secret.
The Spook's Secret were the titles of these books in Britain.
And The Spook's Apprentice.
And The Spook's Apprentice, yeah. And they changed it to the whole series called The Last Apprentice, and then each one has its own little title. Why did they get rid of, in the title, the word spook? In America? I don't know.
Well, I was speculating on the...
I can speculate, too.
But I don't think that people even use that word, that phrase anymore.
Yeah.
I think spook is something scary. You got spooked.
It is. It is. There's a... here's our first mild digression.
Finally.
Finally. There's a Philip Roth book called The Human Stain, about a professor who gets bounced out of his tenured... department chair job in some Eastern college because he uses the word spook in class. He's a new semester. He's taken the role, and he calls the role, and one of the people registered for the class isn't there. And so at the second meeting of that class, he calls the roll again, and that person is still in there, and says, "Does anybody know?" And he says the guy's name. He said, "Or does he exist, or is he a spook?" Well, it turns out the guy was black, and that gets him kicked out of his job.
Oh, dear God.
Yeah, and that's how that book starts. It's a book about a lot of other stuff. It's you know, but obviously it's about race and that sort of thing. Turns out that the professor himself has a big secret.
I think he's like part black or something.
Yeah, he's all black. He's just very, very fair skinned. Mm. So he gets accused of racism, but he's been passing as a white man for 50 years. Anyway, that digression. But that word can be still pretty dicey if used incorrectly. So I guess that's why they decided in America.
We're guessing.
We can only guess. But in the book itself, it's not like they went through and started calling this guy a necromancer or anything like that.
No, he's a spook.
He's a spook. The first sentence is the spook.
Well, he's not really a necromancer.
No. No, he's just a...
He's an exorcist or a...
Yeah, he's kind of a ghost hunter. He's a ghost hunter. Yeah. He's a ghost buster.
He's a ghost binder.
So is your idea to read these books?
I've been wanting to read these, because I mostly read this genre of book. And I think because I don't have to think so much when
you
I'm
don't. Reading them. Well, you can. You can think as much as you want.
You
but
can
it
think
doesn't,
as much as you want. But and you can read them. They're accessible.
Yeah, you can just you can read them down. They don't make unreasonable demands.
No, they don't.
Not like House of Leaves.
Yeah, it's not like House of Leaves. It's very House of Leaves. It's very straightforward. It's right there.
Yep.
It's about. And I think they take more, it's not as goopy as some of those adult fantasy novel things that get all goopy and I don't know how to describe it.
I was going
to
say, I'm gonna make you define goopy.
Just overwrought. They're just always overwrought.
Oh, are you talking self-loathing Anne Rice vampires?
No, I'm talking even beyond, because that's not even overwrought. I'm thinking more of those, I don't know. Pick a speculative fiction or a a trilogy with same kinds of characters, but written for adults.
Yeah.
And, with those fanciful covers, and they're always just overwrought with, the names are always hard to pronounce. And,
I know what you're saying.
It feels like the same damn story all the time.
Yeah,
it is
pretty much the same damn story. Well, so are these, but I don't know. This one's a little different. We'll get into that.
So I've been wanting to read them for
some young adult.
Well, I've been wanting to have it on Necronomipod, and I have read these two before,
which was a surprise to me. But I hadn't read these before, and I'm very glad I did. So I want to thank Mike Moncada here for turning me on to this series, because this series is just launching right now. I think most of us who became Harry Potter fans, when we decided to read Harry Potter, there were three books out there already to read.
I read it right. I read it from the beginning.
Did you really?
Yes.
Did you read the first Harry Potter book when there was only one?
Yes.
So you have your...
same thing with Pullman.
Wow, you read them as they came out. Wow, yeah. You have your finger on the pulse of young adult reading.
You know what?
Young adult fiction.
But really, the young adult reading is really adult reading.
It is. It is. It's just...
I think it's unfairly... on this book, it says for ages 10 and up, and I cannot.
That's us.
I can't. Yes, Peter would
on a good day. Sometimes I switch into like 8 or 9, but mostly I'm 10 and up.
But these are there's very adult themes and adult ideas, and I don't think it's a book for, unless, how old was I when I was 10? Fifth grade,
yeah. Well,
so it probably would have been something I would have read.
Yeah. Yeah, I would have read these when I was in fifth grade. I would have freaking loved these when I was in fifth grade. This would have been right up my alley, because I had just discovered monster movies about a year before.
But we didn't have stuff like this when we were kids.
Not really. You could read stuff like, if you were interested in this kind of thing, and you read, which was like for pleasure, librarians would first of all look at you as if you were the reason for their existence, because you were rare. And they would send you to Edgar Allan Poe, which was not a place to to start. I mean, that's hard going for anybody, even me.
Yeah, I couldn't even. You know, my thing is I usually go into the library not knowing what I want to read, and then I pull a book out of the shelf.
It's a good way to go. I don't do that in the library. I go to the used bookstores to do the same thing,
though. And there is a series, probably of 12 books, written by a guy named Bellamy, who's dead now. But they are a similar, they're not this, but they are a juvenile fiction, but they're kind of a mystery, spooky, ghost, supernatural series. That's a fun read, and there's a lot of books. Wow. And that would have been probably written around the time we were kids, but I don't remember ever seeing that.
Yeah. I mean, there have always been these, not always, but there have been for a long time, these series of books that were marketed for young readers, young adult readers. You can think of The Hardy Boys, the Nancy Drew mysteries, Trixie Belden, these teenage caper stories, and they have the same characters, and they go book after book after book after book after book.
Yeah. Idea isn't new.
Yeah, the idea isn't new, but those would be more publisher driven. The actual authors of those books, maybe the first couple of them had been. Had been written by the same person, but then they would just sort of, farm them out to whoever, and it didn't matter who wrote them as long as it said Hardy Boys in the title somewhere. And even before that, there was early science fiction stories like the Tom Swift books. And I have no specific knowledge of like Spook Hunter books, but there must have been. I mean, they had anything that young readers were interested in, they would come up with a series for. So, like, kids were into, cars. Ever since there have been cars, kids have been into cars. And I remember there was a series called The Auto Boys Club. And it was just, young, intrepid teenage boys, who knew how to fix a car and would get out there on the road and chase stuff. And there was, a good 10, 15 of those books. Always written under a pseudonym. The most famous pseudonym was Victor Appleton Jr. Guy never existed. It was just whoever the publisher assigned, write the book about the Auto Boys in Canada. Victor Appleton, go write that. But nowadays, when you have a young readers series, it's really by the same author, and that author becomes a marketing point. Yeah, J.K. Rowling did that, but even before J.K. Rowling, there's the Spook series. You have R.L. Stein with the Goosebumps stories,
right. And there's the Lemony Snicket, but that's an AKA.
Yeah, but it's that actually is a guy.
It is a guy.
Yeah, just one, not a committee. So I think it's pretty cool. I was actually looking for these books just out of curiosity. I wanted to lay my hands on them in the bookstore recently, and I wasn't able to find them for some reason. I don't know why. I think they deserve to be in all the prominently displayed in all these bookstores. Maybe when the next one comes out, they'll put up a nice big cardboard display.
Yeah, I don't think they.
But
and I think the hard thing about these books now is that they're always going to be compared to Harry Potter.
Yeah.
For a while.
Yeah. Well.
And it would be hard to write a book without it having that in your head.
This may be kind of cynical of me, but I think this guy's agent said, "You know what you need to do? You need to write some young adult fiction. Look at the Harry Potter books." Don't do that exact thing. Do something different, but just keep that in mind, because that we can sell. As your agent, I can take this out and sell this, because this guy's been writing. We just looked at a photograph of this guy on the net here a little while ago, and he's not a spring chicken.
No,
he's been writing.
He's been shaked and baked.
He's been writing for a while.
He's probably a well known booze hound.
Yes, he's a well known drunk. But he's been writing for a while. I think he's a teacher or a professor or something.
But he only wrote one other book other than
this. I know he's not had success. Yeah, so what has he been writing for a while?
How do you know?
Well, because I read this interview with him.
What else has he written?
He wrote this other book. What was it called? You have it written.
Yeah, it's called The Mercer's Whore.
The Mercer's Whore.
But what else has he written?
I don't know. What else
short
has he
story?
What else has he published? That's about it. I'd be very surprised if you find a reference to the Mercer's Whore in the front matter of those books. Because the Mercer's Whore is very much a grown-up's novel. It's a science fiction book, apparently.
It's a horror book for children. It's the horror series.
It's the Horror's Apprentice. Now, we will know, gentle readers, gentle listeners, that that the young adult market has pretty much tapped out when we start seeing series of young horror books.
I suppose the things to compare it to, and I'll, you know, I have to back up because were these books... No, but I suppose you think of, you know, Tolkien and Lewis and Ursula Le Guin's Earthsea series, which
was
a really good series,
great.
And not overwrought.
No.
I don't even know if I can...
The Earthsea series, the first three at least, were intentionally written for young readers.
Yeah, and it's such an adult...
I know. But you know what?
Isn't that what makes a good book for kids? Is that it doesn't talk down to them.
Absolutely.
Which is why I think
when I felt
Harry Potter doesn't talk down.
It doesn't. When J.K. Rowling killed her first character in book four, I mean, like really, like up and killed a kid. I thought, wow, this she is not talking down.
A woman after my own heart.
Yeah, this is some gutty writing, and I really appreciated her. I guess I'd say her courage in doing it. I mean, you know, at that point she was so famous.
You're harming the children. Don't harm the children.
Think about the children.
We always underestimate what kids know and what they can handle and what their brains need to hear. And
yeah, that reminds me of a. I sat through half of Terry Gilliam's latest movie called Tideland. It is a pretty terrible movie. But he starts off, I mean, this movie, I mean, it's a Terry Gilliam movie. People, you know, get really excited about it. You know, he did Brazil and Baron Munchausen and a lot of really good movies. And this one is
Don Quixote.
This is not one of those good movies. But what he was trying to do is he scripted this movie. It's a story about this young girl. It's kind of an Alice in Wonderland story. But her, she's in this horrible situation. Now, I didn't see this whole movie, so I don't know what the working out is. But her parents are junkies, and like she helps her dad, played by Jeff Bridges, like get fixed. She ties him off, and like you know, gets the needle and helps him sticks a needle. Make daddy a cocktail. You know, get daddy's works, and you know, helps him, and like she pulls the needle out and puts the little gauze on there to keep the blood from spraying. Like, you know, then takes a cigarette out of his hand so he doesn't burn himself, and then he tucks him in and then goes and plays with her little doll heads that she puts on her fingers. This movie was so unsuccessful that when it came out on DVD, that Terry Gilliam decided to put a little, you know, director's prologue saying that children are very resilient. Adults forget that. Children bounce. Like grown-ups don't.
Like a bad check.
Yeah, like a bad check. Like, yeah, children bounce when they fall. Like grown-ups don't. And this movie is made very much with that in mind. And I think the really good children's literature, and this has only happened recently, the children, these children are put in very dangerous situations. And they bounce.
But listen, Oliver Twist, Pip...
Yes.
They're all Little Red Riding Hood.
Oh, yes.
They're all Snow White. They're all put in dangerous situations.
Yeah.
And it's being naive to not.
Yeah.
Because I think it's a truly American thing to want to shelter children, but they're not sheltered. And they shouldn't be sheltered. You have to learn how to deal with the darkness in life.
Yeah, exactly.
And does it mean you have to beat your children or take them to prostitutes when they're five and then. Teach them how to shoot up? No.
Generally not. I mean, it depends upon the situation, I'm sure.
And I think that's why every good book, if not every good book, but a lot of good books have, you know, kids becoming orphans of some sort.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or sent away. Or having to, you know, face the world and use their resources.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. No, I think you bringing up Dickens is actually really... appropriate because that's what his does he, all those books they're all about little kids. Well, not all of them, but many of them. Are
well,
about
even
little kids.
Yeah, and even Christmas Carol.
Yeah,
Ebenezer Scrooge starts his he's left to his own devices. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, and those kids, and yes, they're marked by them, but they're also made by those experiences.
Or Huck Finn. I mean, his dad's a drunk beats him, and
I love
Tom Sawyer is an orphan.
Yeah, I love the fact that that people still get bent out of shape about Huck Finn.
Oh,
I think that's great. that's the mark of a great kid's book.
It really is.
I love
it. I don't even know if that was written for kids. I don't know.
I know Tom
Mark Twain set out to write that for kids, but
maybe not.
I mean, it has kids as the protagonist.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. So all these, you know, books about children, they all kind of, you know, they're all standing in the wings, you know, in the back of my mind when I was reading these books. This particular series, I don't know if it's, you know, the best example of it, but I really enjoy this, these Last Apprentice books. So, I don't know, Mike, you want to say a little bit of what these things are about? What, you know, what sort of attracted you to them?
Well, originally it's just because I pulled the book off. I think it was
like you were saying. It's a guy in a cloak.
I think it was the cover.
Well, it's a good cover.
It's a good cover.
Not as good as the British covers, though.
The British covers aren't as realistic.
They look like an old leather bound tome.
The thing I like about that, and even rereading it, I liked them even more. Was one is it's told in the first person, which I always enjoy.
Yes, very much.
And two, he's not an orphan; he's an apprentice. But in a way, an apprenticeship was an imposed orphan. Because you were sent away, you were considered an adult, and you were sent away. But he relies on his parents, and his parents are helpers, and so that's, I like that. I like that it's set in sort of this, it's a real, how can you say this? It's not a real place, but it could be a real place.
Yeah, no,
it's not like a fantastic world, but there's fantastic things.
Yeah.
And it feels normal in a way to the book.
It seems like it's like...
It's hyper-real or magical realism or whatever.
Yeah. It seems like it's like 15th century Britain. Because it is England.
It's England, but you never... They just call it the country.
Yeah.
The country. And you don't know what country it is. Really.
Yeah. And there's, if not the Catholic Church, it is a Catholic Church, because there's inquisitors. There is, I don't think
there's priests. There's a place called Priest Town.
Yeah. They don't ever talk about Jesus or anything like that, but they talk about heaven
and St. Matthew.
They do talk about St. Matthew. That's right. Yeah.
And so it's this sort of, there's these ruminations and rumination sandwiches. But there's these things you go, oh, I know what this is, but wait, it's just kind of twisted a little bit. So there's a familiarity to it, and yet it has that kind of magical thing to it, or that spooky thing to it that you go, oh.
It's just a couple.
I can see this happening.
Yeah, it's just a couple degrees off of what we think of history as.
Yeah, it would be. Yeah, it would be like an all. Well, it probably. I'm guessing back in those days there were people who got rid of things.
Yeah.
That go bump in the night. I mean, we have those now, but
yeah. So in America, it wasn't too long ago, and it's probably still happening now, where you have people, you know, what do they call them? Not twitchers. They call them.
They are twitchers.
Well, those are bird watchers. But the guys with the guys who walk
dowsers.
Dowsers. The spook, the profession of the spook, is not that different from being a dowser.
No, and it's like a itinerant exorcist.
Yeah, he's an itinerant exorcist.
But he doesn't use, he uses knowledge and kind of brute force. rather than using like the dark arts or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. They use elements. They use salt. They use iron. They use silver.
So that's the other thing about these books is that it takes some mythologies and some fairy tales and some kind of things, historical, superstitious things, and then has them making a sense. A practical science or what craft or whatever.
Yeah.
So
it's what we call a couple podcasts ago. It makes magical sense.
Makes magical sense. And so I like that. And I like that this character, I like that this young character gets put to the test all the time. And I like the character. Yeah. I like all the characters.
You know, when I started reading this, I thought, you know, I saw the setup. You know, the spook comes and makes his negotiation to take on young Tom as Tom, right?
Tom Ward. Yeah.
Tom Ward as the apprentice, and you know, it's an usual apprentice deal. Where
and in walks Donald Trump and makes him.
No,
you're fired.
No, but it's, you know, it's the regular apprentice arrangement. You know, I'll take you on you know, on approval.
Yeah, and then, you have a month.
You have a month, and if I decide to take you on, then your father will pay, you know, the apprenticeship fees to me, and I will take you on then. And I was expecting this to be this whole Dickensian thing where the spook himself is, you know, may have a heart of gold, but that apprentice isn't going to see it for a while. But the spook himself is actually he's stern, and he's a pretty harsh taskmaster, but he's a decent guy.
Yeah, he's fair.
He's fair. You can tell that he has affection for the young guy.
Yeah.
And I was charmed by that.
Yeah. Yeah, they're they're charming.
So,
What did you like? I mean, these are the reasons, and these are things I look for in these kinds of books.
Yeah.
And I find sometimes that the characters are drawn better in these kinds of stories.
They are. These characters are they're full characters.
If I compare this, say, to the last book we read,
those
characters weren't engaging.
Yeah, in the last book, which is Brian Aldiss's Frankenstein Unbound. Yeah, they were paper thin.
Yeah,
they were cut out. They were cut out.
Yeah, and these characters don't seem that way to me. They all have their own individual sort of taste to them that you go, even the words they use and
it's wonderful. There's some characters in here that I just like, you know, I cannot wait for this next book to be published at the end of this month, a couple weeks. Woohoo.
Like Alice.
Love her. Alice is a great character.
Because she's...
And Tom's mother is...
Tom's mother's a great character.
Great character. I cannot wait to find out what her deal is.
Yeah. Does she take off? Does she
take off? What is the rest of her story?
Does she have scales down the middle of her back?
Is she a Lamia witch?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure she is.
Totally. Yeah. More of the spook himself's history. And to find out... Tom is himself writing these stories. I mean, one of the things that he does as an apprentice is he has to write constantly. He has to take constant notes. He has to keep a diary. One of the ways that he learns his job is to read other people's diaries. And so these books are presented pretty much as, you know, kind of his diary.
It's kind of his diary. And you're not sure when they're written. Like, is he writing this later? Looking back and writing it,
it's kind of ambiguous.
I think
the author is kind of keeping that card.
I'm kind of kind of feel like he's writing maybe 10 years.
Yeah.
Down.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe. I think. It could be any of a number.
And that's the great thing I think about first person is that you kind of discover along with the character. You're as much in the dark as he is, because you don't know what else has been. Mm-hmm. Happening, until he finds out, until he can tell it to you.
Yeah, I mean, I think these books, I mean, they're hinting about some big eruption of evil coming forward. You know, it's not he who must not be named, but there's something. I mean, you know, in the second book, the Bane is serious stuff. I mean, it's really menacing.
It is. It did remind me a little bit of Lasher from the. Anne Rice's.
Oh, I never read that.
The Mayfair Witches.
It kind of reminded me of the White Worm.
Yeah. But it's a common...
The bookish worm.
But it's a common fairy tale story of sort of the devil who does your bidding and the demon mm-hmm. who does your bidding mm-hmm. and the... And I mean, that's the djinn or whoever. I mean, yeah. those are not new ideas.
No. Yeah, I mean, none of this. This is all built very consciously and thoroughly on, you know, old, for the most part, British legendary folklore.
Absolutely.
And you know, and
but with a little,
it's a little bit
like
yeah,
one dimension removed, like one planet. It's like there was this series of dimensions of of timelines. This would mm-hmm. be one or two over, like you said, and this. Yep. That's what this is.
Yeah, no, it's and it's great. So, Mike, here's
is it one? Is it horror?
If that's my question. Is it horror?
I think it is.
I did not think so in the first book, and I thought very much in the second book.
I think it because it deals with ghosts and demons.
Yeah, it's,
and
it has all that spooky stuff.
All that stuff. All like that, all it's, those it's ghost. It's ghost stories.
Yeah, it's very Halloween-y. In both books, but in the second book, it becomes actually there's a bit of gore, which is I was kind of, you know, taken aback by that, you know, in a young adult novel, to have some actual gore. I mean, not real blood and guts, like, you know, this is when, you know, this is, and then he had his fingernails peeled back and then his eyes gouged out. Nothing like that, but stuff like,
yeah, I don't think you need that to have horror.
No, but this has a bit of gore,
but there's
which
some
is an element of horror novels.
Well, yeah, there's the flattened...
Yeah, the pressing. The press.
Well, wait, let's back up.
All right.
The first novel had gore in it. There's that witch that's just this mushy, wormy...
You're right. That was...
...thing that... And she's eating bloody cakes of who knows. You think
you're
there's
right.
babies in
you're
them.
Right.
And,
you are absolutely right.
And,
that is... I just didn't
the,
have...
The character just... of... what is his name? The Tusk has this like deformed face with these fangy things. And there's and there's some creepy characters in that first book. Bony Lizzie and what's Mammy.
Oh, Mother Malkin.
Mother Malkin?
Yeah, Mother Malkin.
Wicked. And the scenes of the the slaughtering pigs and the blood.
That was,
the baby with a knife to the baby's neck and...
Yeah, oh, putting babies in danger and baby eating. That's like, wow, they're having baby eating in this game. That's good stuff.
There's baby eating all over the place.
Very tender. Very tender. Suckling human.
I don't know. I was thinking,
when I think of gore, and this is just me, honestly... When I think of gore, I think of sort of like 70s splatter gore, which is a healthy teenager being cut up.
But there is nothing that we have read that has been like that gory.
I know. Which
maybe
the zombie books. The zombie books have an always, by definition, have to have an element
I don't
of
think,
gore. Kind
I
of
think
now.
That's. I don't. If gore is what makes it horror, then.
Oh no! It doesn't.
But
it doesn't.
But
gore is actually a separate genre from horror. There's a big overlap, but it's a separate genre.
And as I was reading this, like I'm wondering if you would consider this horror now that I'm reading that, and I had to say, yeah, it is. I mean, horror in the very broad sense of everything that we have read so far, which really is on the dances on the edge.
I know. It's again. It's like Neil Gaiman says. It's horror is a spice. It's not a genre.
And I thought there was it.
There was this was liberally spiced with horror.
And there's things like where the kid is in his first test, where he hears the voice of his mother at the door, and then he has to go down to the basement. And
that was good.
It was good.
That was good.
And there's the
demon
sucking at the girl's fingers.
Yeah, that was.
Which is just creepy. And then the priest whose leg is... You know, trapped under the marble and the demon sucking.
Yeah.
You can hear the blood.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
And the demon, and you have to amputate his leg and then put tar on it. And
for those listeners who haven't read them, I suspect many of our listeners haven't actually read these books.
I'm sure they haven't.
Yeah. The first book is good, but it may not hook you. Give it the second. Go through it, and make it to the second book, because the second book.
I wouldn't want
to
set you up for that because it hooked me the first book. That's why I read the second.
That's
book.
Right. You're right.
So I don't think.
Yeah, I was expecting more from the first book, but it was I know now why I didn't like it, because the author Joseph Delaney had had his whole hand played out. He was just playing a couple of cards. He has more cards to play, and he starts playing some of his big cards in the second one. And I cannot wait for the third book.
There's another thing too. I think there's some big ideas that get thrown out here, like what makes a person evil. And a person isn't
very
evil.
Big ideas, yes.
You know, and the mother says everybody's a mix.
Yeah,
and you can't just. And the spook is more. The spook is more dogmatic in his words and his practices.
He's more pragmatic.
He's more pragmatic, but his words are, you know. And the mother is, because the mother is from that world, so.
Yeah.
And, you know, which also means her son is.
Yes.
And that it's more realistic. People are a little bit of everything.
Yeah. This actually brings up
which is a big idea, I think.
It's a big idea.
Because I think, and it's very anti-American in a way. Because we want people to be
Hats and black hats.
Yeah, and that's it. And it's not clear. And that's why the character of Alice is so cool, because
very much.
She is not she's both, and she does, and she's
this
helpful.
Kind of,
and
this kind of ties into I'm a fairly regular reader of an online magazine called Salon. And in light of the, you know, the seventh and final Harry Potter book just came out, and somebody wrote yet another essay on Salon about Harry Potter, and this one was sort of saying that Harry Potter was wondering out loud what this generation of young readers is going to think, having been brought up on what they call the Manichaean world of Harry Potter, which is the eternal battle of good and evil, and they're kind of equally matched. And that's not what Harry Potter's about at all. That everything is either black or white, and it's just
no,
it's not at all.
No.
What is this person reading? That's
no.
It's that.
It's
that,
not.
It's not.
Because everybody turns on a different dime in a way.
I know. And
Snape
Harry,
does, and
yeah, Harry
even,
Harry himself,
even
Dumbledore,
and Harry, and
yeah, they're all a mix.
And Harry, so you can't.
I still have not read the seventh one, and this guy has, and so we're just gonna stop this right now. We're going to talk about this book.
Let's just think many things contain other things.
Of course they do.
Everything contains... Right, which is what makes it so less...
And as much as that these young adult books teach that people are, you know, they're not good or evil. They're a product of kind of their choices, of their situations, of all kinds of stuff. And that you can, you know, to a degree... make your life.
Well, and let's go in the Bane book.
Yes.
Alice, you know, releases a demon.
Yeah.
But she has a well thought out reason why she does it.
She does.
And actually, from that point of view of the book, it makes sense. In fact, it helps everybody.
Yeah.
Except for that poor farmer and his wife and her baby.
Yes.
But
oh, well.
She had to, it's almost like she had to use the atom bomb.
Yeah,
you know,
she uses the. That's exactly that's actually perfect. She uses the freaking atom bomb,
and
it works out.
And it works. Oh, and
at great cost.
At great cost, and she also can't do it alone because eventually, she realizes, and to her credit, she agrees. Like, oh, I'm being taken over.
Yeah, I am no longer.
You will blindfold me and put. Wax in my ears
and
put
hide me under hay.
Hay because I know that's what has to happen.
Because I am now a liability. I can no longer be trusted.
Such a great character. She is such a girl with the pointy shoes. Beware of girls with pointy shoes.
That's what we should call our cocktail. Girls with pointy shoes.
And you know what I love is that the names are Alice and Tom and not like Jum Schlabbelblup
and Gregory
and Liberlitz and. In the town of Glambikisland.
And Harwell Prolar.
Yeah,
I
mean, so done with that.
And Gudrun.
They go to priest town, where there's like tons of churches.
Just stinking with priests. Kind of like
lousy with priests.
Kind of like Doppeltown East.
It really is.
Lousy with priests.
And the priests are corrupt. And that's the other big idea that comes in this. There's this difference between God and church.
Yeah.
And that the church is corrupt and that the spook had been, it's probably why I'm attracted to these books too, because the spook had been a priest and that these priests are fools and that they're dangerous fools because they go in places beyond their expertise, which causes trouble.
This is kind of anti-popishness is something that is uniquely European, especially British and Irish. Irish writers really get upset about the hold that the Catholic Church has had on their country, and that comes through in this book in spades.
Well, it did a lot of devastating things.
Oh, it's terrible! It's terrible what happened.
And I love in this book, the representative is called the Inquisitor. No, the
Quisitor.
The Quisitor, which isn't the Inquisition, but the Quisitor.
Yeah.
And this idea that these people get accused because he wants their property.
Yeah.
He sells their property.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for profit, but under the guise of religion and religiosity. Mm-hmm. And boy, does that.
Yeah.
So there is a subversion in these books that
he kind of protects his flank by saying that it's the bane, it's influence that is corrupting the priesthood in this town.
But the Quisitor is not from this town. He's from the north.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. True that.
So, which I think are big ideas as well. Yeah. And then there's even a question in the book, I think Tom asked the spook, do you believe in God? Not the God that the church teaches.
Yeah, so I'm listening to this book, and the question comes up, and I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I think that's cool.
That's very cool. I credit that the person sort of opening the way to those kind of questions in young adult literature. I just have to mention Philip Pullman, who's a writer that I respect, more than any other writer.
Yeah, an atheist as well.
Yeah, opening up the big questions.
He opens those big questions. In that last book, The Amber Spyglass, oh my God, it's not a kid's book.
Oh, I know, it's so...
There is no way is it a kid's
book. It's so subversive.
You cannot spin that book any other way.
And the fact that it's in all these kids' libraries...
And that sex saves the world, basically.
Yeah. And that parents, mostly just because parents who would object to this kind of thing just, aren't going to have the patience and really, frankly, the literacy to read all three of these books to get to the end of this third book,
where God, in quotes, disappears.
Yeah.
He's this old, he's the demiurge, and he's this old,
obsoletes into nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's just obsolescent.
He's being carted around on this...
The authority.
The authority. I mean, there is no freaking way the book is... it's so subversive.
It is profoundly subversive. It's the story of Paradise Lost reaching the exactly opposite conclusion. Instead of justifying the ways of God to man, it justifies the ways of... It unjustifies the ways of God to man. It says, you are not relevant anymore. God is not useful anymore.
Well, God in quotes again, because they don't talk about usurpers.
Yeah.
Who come in and pose as God, basically.
Yeah.
And everybody comes to believe that they're God.
Yeah.
And that's narcissism. We've talked about that in the podcast. Yeah.
It's like the king. It's the office, and people think it's a hereditary thing, and it's simply a concept.
And I think what all these books say is don't let what you've been told and what you see be the last word.
Yeah. Because
what you're being shown is not what you need to see.
Yeah.
This is not.
Just
like in this book. Well, this is the church, and this is what is really going on.
Yeah.
And so there.
So there, yeah. No, that's what I'm...
That's a new thing, I think. That's got to be in the last 20 years.
I love the fact that young adult literature is teaching these lessons in the form of entertainment. This kind of higher thinking. I mean, really profound, useful thinking that is never going to is always going to be useful to you. It is always going to help you guide you in your thinking about the big questions. And you know, these kids are being taught this subtly and not so subtly.
Right, and they're also right.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic.
But also the other things that come through in this book are about loyalty and courage and sacrifice. I mean, those are all good things.
Yeah. All good things.
There aren't. It isn't like hedonism or, you know, to hell with you.
And forgiveness.
Yeah, and trying to not let your point of view be the only point of view. Yep. And
questioning of authority. I mean, the authority in this book is...
Also giving yourself over to it when you have to.
Yeah.
I mean, there's both.
Yeah.
I like. I know.
I'm just knocked out by these books. I read both of these books this week, and by reading I mean listening to. These are available on CD for.
I was wondering what you were gonna think because as I was reading, I'm like, oh, Mike's gonna hate this.
No. Well, the first book, I was setting aside judgment. But the second book came along and it just completely hooked me. Now,
wait, let's go back.
I listened to the first two Harry Potter books and they did not hook me.
Well, let's
when
go back
to
the
third one. It was good.
Let's go back to the first book. I don't understand what you're talking about.
That I didn't like it?
Yeah. What about it that you didn't?
It just didn't seem. It seemed the scope seemed too small. And this goes back to what I was saying before, that if you think about. In the interview I read with Joseph Delaney, he said when he originally was contracted to do these books and he thought about it, he wrote his prospectus or his proposal, he had three books in mind. He had a plot. He had plotted out three books, and so think about those three books as a deck, as a hand of cards. He was just playing his first couple of tentative
right.
tentative.
But what
cards.
Do you mean the scope was too small?
It just he was it was it seemed that it wasn't it was a tentative beginning.
Still more adjectives. What do you mean?
Adjectives. Blue.
More vagueness. What are you talking about?
It didn't grab me
because
I did not yet care enough about the characters.
Okay. Because
I did not yet know enough about them.
Okay.
So in the second book, when some serious revelations come forward, and they come forward early. I mean, you have that ripping first scene where the spook is sick, and Tom has to go and do his very first binding. He has to go out and bind a ripper boggart.
He's a number one ripper as well.
A number one ripper, which is a very dangerous one, and
there's a system of 1 to 10, and one being the worst.
And it's a serious, it's a dangerous situation. The person that he's trying to save ultimately dies. I mean, it's gory. It's
the spook's brother.
And it's the spook's brother. I mean,
priest.
It's a priest.
He's been having an affair with his
housekeeper,
which is another thing.
I
that's in this book.
I mean, that first scene was fantastic. The first book was a little too rote for me. Now, I am not saying this in any way to disparage Joseph Delaney, because what he's writing is a trilogy. He's putting his first pieces out there. He's setting the scene. He is doing this very carefully and thoughtfully, and I respect him for doing it. And I would not have enjoyed the second book nearly as much as I did had he not written the first book the way he does. So I'm just looking at it as a piece. I want the next issue. I want the next installment in this big story.
But I think I see. To me, that didn't happen. So that's why I'm trying to understand why
when you started reading this, there was only one book.
There was only one book, and I waited and waited for the, but I saw. I think again, it's that thing of writing first person, and you're also in the timeline.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking 6 months in the world of these books. So your things are being revealed and there's hints dropped. And that was enough to keep me feeling like these are multi-dimensional people. Yeah.
And you know, and to be fair, this is a feature of, this is a symptom of my reading. When I read a series of books, usually the first book leaves me a little intrigued, but kind of cold. The first Harry Potter book, I thought, it's all right. I'm kind of interested. But when I get to the second one, I mean, because these worlds kind of grow.
Right.
The authors get more ideas, and they kind of, you know, they
which is also the downfall sometimes, because sometimes they get too big.
Yeah, they get too big. Byzantine, yeah.
Yeah, and they get...
Yeah, exactly.
It plays out to...
Yeah, I mean, this... and it's, you know, it's actually, it's kind of a... People will gripe about this, that people don't write science fiction novels anymore or fantasy novels.
They write trilogies.
They write trilogies or worse. They just write...
Quadrility.
Yeah. People keep running down poor Robert Jordan. You know, I've never read these books. But his series, the Wheel of Time series, is what now? 12, 14, 900-page books, 1,000-page books? You know, you gotta write your damn story and then go on. but that's as a publisher, as a business proposition, you know, you don't want to start off from scratch with every time you sign up a book. You want to, you know, build some loyalty. So trilogies are the way to go. Or, you know,
right, because you have a built-in...
Or tetralogies, or...
Well, and it kind of goes back to the whole serial novels. I mean, that's basically what these are. I mean,
yeah.
They're a page a day, or
a
chapter a week, or whatever.
Yep. And it's...
People like that.
People like that, and you build loyalty,
But you also build a relationship.
Yes, you do.
And
if it doesn't take off, when you publish the first book... And it doesn't take off, you publish a second book and maybe get a few more people and you reprint the first book and you publish a third book and, you know, maybe it hooks on. And somebody's like, oh, there's like five of these books now. Right. Well, you know, this is what I'm going to do this summer. I'm going to read the Artemis Fowl books, or I'm going to read the whatever.
The Charles Bone book.
Yeah. That's not how this started. I mean, J.R.R. Tolkien, if he had had his druthers, would have just as soon published The Lord of the Rings as a book of about 1,400 pages. His publisher broke it up. But it's a marketing thing. And now when you get to, talking about my current obsession, taking this marketing strategy one step further, the whole manga series idea where you get, you know, these guys... These graphic novel comic books go 5, 14, 35 issues, where, you know, you print one and you get a little bit of a following, you print two. When you get up to around 12, 13, or 14, every time a new issue comes out, you start a whole new cycle of readers. And by the time the last one comes out, you have got a major following for every single book. And you're selling huge.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Oh, I think it's great. But still, there is a place for readers to buy a book, read it, close the book, and that's it.
And some things lend themselves to that, and some things don't.
It's true. It's true.
Yeah.
Well, that said, I'm very excited about this particular series to grow. I think there's a lot more to learn about this world, and I think it will be as good as Harry Potter. I'll just go out there and say that.
In a different way.
Yeah. Harry Potter has...
It's not... Harry Potter's more bloated.
Yeah, Harry Potter has elements that, because it was so successful, it was bloated. Bloated is exactly the word to use. It was, because nobody can say no to somebody who is richer than the Queen. She is richer than the Queen. Yes, indeed.
Wow.
She's one of the richest people in the world.
Good for her.
Good for her. Indeed. I don't know that Joseph Delaney is going to be richer than the Queen by the end of this.
No,
but he's gonna have a nice house.
I think people have to cycle through things, and things will pop up maybe 5-6 years from now. But the next whoever,
yeah,
you know, if there ever was, you know, I don't know who would, Rawlings' predecessor would have been that had that big of a impact.
Nobody, I don't think.
Huge impact.
I don't think anybody. J.K. Rowling was the first. J.K. Rowling. I don't think anyone did that before. Not while they were young and good looking.
Well, and she's not.
J.R.R. Tolkien lived long enough to see his legacy. I mean, to see him be one of the best selling writers in the world, but he was really old.
Well, and her stuff isn't innovative. I mean, it's derivative. No, it's,
yeah, it's derivative. It's you know, it's Roald Dahl.
In a way, yeah. I mean, it's the classic story. You go away to school and you find out who you are, and
your parents aren't really your parents. And,
right,
you know,
it's every child's dream.
You wake up and one day you're famous and fabulously wealthy.
Well, that's the thing I like in these books as well, is that the kid. It's what happens when you're an adult. You find out, oh, my parents aren't parents, they're people.
Yeah.
And they have this complicated life, and he gets surprised.
Yeah.
And I like that.
Yeah.
I like...
Yeah. Also, there are hints that he is... he's very special.
Yeah, sort of like Dune. He's been set up to be...
Yeah, he's Paul Muad'Dib. Atreides. He's...
which is another sort of... you know, that's probably a cousin to these novels.
Yeah.
And the Harry Potter as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, and probably Hercules. I mean, it's the same
Moses.
Idea.
Yeah.
So, Jesus.
Freaking Jesus. Speaking of Jesus, you know what time it is?
No.
It's cocktail time.
It's cocktail time.
So what is the cocktail this week, Mike?
Well, I'm glad you asked. Today, this week's cocktail is called Village Girls with Pointy Shoes.
Village Girls with Pointy Shoes, which you apparently you need to be aware of.
You do need to be aware of Village Girls with Pointy Shoes.
So be careful with this particular drink, because it is morally ambiguous and may sneak up on you.
When Tom Ward first goes to live with the spook, he sends him to the village to pick up a sack of groceries, and one of the last things he says to him is, beware of girls with pointy shoes, because they're nothing but trouble.
They're nothing but trouble. So here's some trouble for you. What is in this bucket of trouble?
Well, it's quite a delightful little menage.
Menage. It's a swill. It's a tasty little swill.
It's a slurry of liquor. So it's, I would say, 2 shouts of stout, sturdy stout.
Sturdy stout, like, well, specifically, what do we say?
Young's double chocolate.
Double chocolate
Young's
stout.
Young's double chocolate stout.
Yeah,
I would say 3 shots.
3 shots of Young's double chocolate stout. So when you get a pint can, you're going to need a couple, you're going to need a couple friends or,
and actually,
you know,
maybe a half a cup.
Half a cup
a
of
half
Young's
a cup
double
of
chocolate Young. Stout.
And then a shot of Jameson and a shot of Tawny Port.
Mmm. That sounds like trouble.
And do you put it on ice?
No. But you're going to want it cold.
You want it cold.
But not too cold.
What would you use as a garnish?
On this one, a nice head of beer.
A nice head of beer.
Yeah.
There you go.
Drink it down.
Girl with pointy shoes.
Have another one.
Village girls with pointy shoes.
All right. So shall we go
Delish.
On? Delish.
We're drinking it right now.
So shall we go on to, do we have anything more to say about our Last Apprentice series here?
What do you wish the book sort of, the book that you really like, what do you wish what would have made it better?
Well, you know, maybe that's the reason that I liked it so much, is because anything that I would want it to do better, there's at least 2 more books coming out. And so I'm just going to wait for it to do it.
Look, and you're all giddy about it.
I'm just giddy. I'm stupid with anticipation. The fact that the next book is coming out in... We're recording this on August 12th.
Well, actually, the next book is out.
The third one is.
The third one is out.
No, it comes out August 28th in America.
In America. But it's already out in Great Britain.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
If we have any Great Britain people who listen,
send us a copy. We'll read it and we'll send it back
to you. In your world, it's called the Night of the Spooks. No, it's called It. I don't know what it's called. The Spook's Secret.
The Spook's Secret. Big secret. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Send it to us.
Spooks are transsexual. I went and got my hair.
That would be a surprise.
I went and got my hair cut today.
Did you?
And the hair cutter was a transsexual.
Are you serious?
You know what was really funny? She did nothing to act like a woman. She was just like a guy with long hair and nails and makeup. I'm like, you're not even pretend.
You're just going to sit right on that damn fence all day.
You're not even
you?
Acting like a woman. You're just acting like a guy with long hair. I mean, and his name was Jessica.
Hi, hello, I'm Jessica.
He didn't even. Yeah, it's like, dude.
Sorry.
If you're going to be
I didn't shave today.
If you're not going to be a dude, then, like, at least, like, make an attempt.
I'm sure it gets tiring.
It's hard being a woman.
It is hard being a woman when you're actually a dude.
It is.
Yes, indeed.
But she gave me a good haircut.
She did.
She
let me,
did.
Let me see on the side here. Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. Yeah, that works. It's working double time. Anyway, do we have any further words to say on these sordid tales of the spook?
What did you think about the squishing?
It was kind of squishy. Made me kind of feel like, pancakes.
What did you think about how the Quisitor died? The Quisling.
Oh, you know, the Quisitor is a fantastic villain. I had this really strong reaction to villains who are people who are abusing
their power,
their absolute power.
Yeah.
I mean, it's actually kind of uncomfortable for me to read about characters like that.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I really hate it, and especially when they do it as in an office, a religious office.
Yeah,
I really, really have a problem with that,
yeah.
And which makes them great villains for me. And so when they get their comeuppance,
it really
can't be violent enough.
Yeah,
for me.
Well, first his hands burn. And
yeah,
then,
I know.
You're not really sure how he dies after that, drowns or something.
Something like that. Yeah. Think he's gonna come back?
No.
Yeah,
I don't think there's a need for him. It's possible.
It's possible. But not in the next book, like way down the line.
I liked the ambiguity of things, the moral ambiguity.
Yeah. Yeah, the fact that it's neither black nor white, that our heroes are seen, are shunned by the people that they're helping because they seem to be working in a black art, but what they're really doing is, they're sewer workers.
They're basically, I like that too.
I really like that.
They're basically like plumbers.
Yeah, they're plumbers. You know, they seem to be low class to most of the people that they help, but they're absolutely, absolutely necessary.
What else? Anything else?
I don't know. Well, we have to pick our next book.
Yeah. What do you think?
Well,
what do you have in mind?
Well, I want to read something that's a horror novel, but that has a large, a heavy dose of gore.
Oh,
now,
God.
I know. Indulge me. Well, I have a couple of ideas.
All right.
I have two ideas. I've been reading about this. I've never read any books by this guy, but he's apparently a master of gore.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Edward Lee.
Okay.
Something by Edward Lee.
All right.
He has a book out called Slither. Apparently it's supposed to be pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But we could pick something by that guy.
All right.
Or I found another genre. It's... Now... Hear me out.
All right.
There is a genre out there of the Christian horror novel.
Okay.
And it has a couple of practitioners. There is one book about a haunted house.
Right.
It's recently out, and it's in all the libraries I've checked.
Is it like the last? Is it like a rapture thing or something?
I don't know.
Horror novels.
A Christian horror novel.
I would love to roast that.
Would you like to roast that? All right, that's what we're gonna do. I think it might be called like Haunted House or
Haunted Bible,
something or Haunted something or other. But we'll post it what the book is on the Necronomipod site, and we will read it up and extol its virtues, or
more I'm likely, already pre-planning
ripping it a new one. But so there it is. Join us next time.
Boy, there's a genre for everything, isn't
there?
Oh,
urban
novel. Have you heard of that one?
Oh yeah. Yeah, I saw a whole display about the urban novel. 50 Cent has a novel out now. It's urban.
Good lord.
Well, we could read an urban horror novel.
The Candyman.
Candyman's one. Yeah, people.
What about the Jew novel? What about the Catholic?
There's tons of
the Irish Catholic romance novel.
I want the cyber horror.
I want the Buddhist cyber horror novel.
About dentists.
Everything's just getting put into smaller and smaller.
I know.
Categories, isn't it?
It's how the internet. It's like a function of the internet. You know, people. No matter how small your niche is, you can find other people in that niche out on the internets.
It's true.
It's true. Yeah.
Damn Al Gore.
Stupid Al Gore for inventing the internet.
He only invented the one. George Bush invented the other.
Yeah.
Well, anything else?
Oh, I don't think so.
All right. That was dandy.
That was pretty good. Let's pat each other on the back.
Oh! You're hitting my spiny.
Oh, your
spinal cord.
Your spinal cord injury.
My reptilian spinal cord.
Your dorsal fin.
I'm a Lemurian.
Your pronounced hump and your vestigial tail.
My dowager's hump. So let's put a stake in it.
And I think we should put some garlic in its mouth. And
don't forget to cut off its head.
Yes. Should we use a cleaver or a shovel this time?
I think we should use a dull butter knife.
A dull butter knife.
All right, then.
Goodbye.
Bye. Military orders are subject to